Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out. Took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
All right. We're going to leave it open mic today if you guys want to chime in on anything. Just some quick announcements for us, and this is the title of our live stream today. Our title today is Grown Ass Man Training 40 Acres Camp. Grown Ass Man Training 40 Acres Camp. This was inspired by a exchange I had. A Texan exchange I had this morning, the sun wasn't even up yet. Okay, here's what I got in program notes, and I'll go through them. House building, growing food, I got to correct some of this. Monthly income. Inflation planning 5, 10, 20, 30 years out, house building camp, grown-ass man training camp, relationship preparation and financial literacy training, and 40 acres camp. Kevin Samuels, and this started over a Kevin Samuels video that I was watching this morning or listening to the audio portion of it. And the Kevin Samuels was giving I'm a Kevin Samuels fan, but he was giving his what grown ass man need to have, and it was all based on grooming. All right. And I'm looking at, well, you got a lot of broke guys out here that are well-groomed, but they might be lacking in the child care department, or they can't pay the rent or barely paying the rent, lights out, something like that. So I said, you know what, let me organize a grown-ass man training camp to men who are having problems with paying the rent, paying the mortgage, getting the money together for a down payment. Let me teach them, along with other people, on how to build their own house. Now, all we're going to do is Amish economics, just people getting together with some skilled people and then teaching non-skilled people how to build their own debt-free house. And then we'll have some, once you get that fundamental piece down, then we can discuss the strategies that you're going to take if you got to deal with child support, if you got to deal with back rent payments, if you got to deal with mortgage payments or college loans or just an infinite amount of debts that you can run into just in life. So we're announcing that. And we also, for the reparations people, okay, while you're waiting on your reparations check or whatever, or the people that are talking about, they promised us 40 acres. Well, you know what? I'm also announcing 40 Acres Camp. All right? While you're waiting on the government, you can join us at 40 Acres Camp, and we're going to show you how to buy 40 acres. I'm going to show you how to buy 40 acres. All right. And you know what? If you get an extra 40 acres from the government, so be it. But this is for people that want to act on something right now. Now, once again, now we're not talking about how you can extract something from the government. This is no government program. There's no vouchers involved. You're going to have to come out of your pocket. But if you want to learn how to pick up 40 acres at an affordable price, okay, if you're paying rent, if you're paying a mortgage payment, if you bought a pair of Jordans, or you can afford to buy, you might not be able to buy 40 acres all in one fell swoop, but you can do it. Now, I've got a 10-acre tract of land that I picked up for $2,000. If I did that a total of four times, that's $8,000 for 40 acres. That can still be done. Depending on where you buy the land, you can get it at a less expensive price. And once again, if it's in another location, it could be more, or definitely dramatically more. But it can be done by the average person. If I can do it, in my opinion, anybody can do it. All right. So we got 40 Acres Camp, we got Grown-Ass Man Training Camp, and we got House Building Camp. And for the church folk, we have Camp 6521. Camp 6521 is based on Isaiah 6521. Read it. It's about a sentence long. All right, so Camp Isaiah 6521, which is a housing outreach, we have that. House Building Camp, which gets you the fundamentals, taught to anybody between the ages of 8 and 108, both men and women. All encouraged to join up with us. Grown-Ass Man Training Camp and 40 Acres Camp. Those are the four camps that we have available. Now, I'm going to add another camp in there, and that's Relationship Camp, available for men and women. Relationship Camp. And this camp basically shows you how to put your relationship on solid footing before you get into a deep and heavy relationship, or if you're already in one, how you can get at least the financial part of it straight. And all of it, house building's included in all of it. We hit it from different angles. So if you're interested in any of those, contact me, 425-520-0605. You can call or text me at 425-520-0605. All right. And we just might have it in your neck of the woods, because we are soliciting that. Let's see. If you go to our Facebook page, okay, which is It's My House TV on Facebook. It's My House TV. There's two or maybe three pictures of me on a building project. So I'll be right along with you building. All right. Let me see. All right. If you guys got any particular topic that you want to talk about trending, please give us a call here at 619-768-2945. And you know, because basically, that's the announcement I have for today. Those five workshops. Grown Ass Man Training Camp, 40 Acres Camp, Camp 6521, which is based on Isaiah 6521. House Building Camp. And what was the last one I just thought of? Well, it has to do with relationship. Relationship Camp. That's the working title. So that's what I got for you. Those five. All right. 619-768-2945. If you got any comment or any trending topic or any questions about any of those five camps that I just named.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this, because it remains the property of the clients. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness, because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is, these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working, and then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tonnes of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technicians, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Of course, it's cold. The beer tastes better. And so I get more customers.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively. And you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
Okay, so we have a camp, five camps, grown-ass man training camp, which is for people 8 to 80, but you can call me more details on that. For the people who want reparation, you know, the people that want reparation probably wouldn't even come to this camp, but we're offering it, 40 acres camp. For the people out there whining that you didn't get your 40 acres or nobody or your ancestors didn't get your 40 acres, well, here's your opportunity to get 40 acres. Now, you're going to have to work for it, though. will teach you how to get the 40 acres. This has nothing to do with the government. You're not going to the government getting this. There's no program to get this. This is you. This is us teaching you how to find, where to go find affordable acres to buy. Some of you might have to get it acre by acre. Some of you might have to get a quarter acre at a time. But you'll learn how to get as many acres as you want. So we have a 40 acres camp. We also have Camp 6521, which is based off of Isaiah 6521. So anybody interested in those, text me at 425-520-0605 if you want more information on that. Got kids or grandkids, want to teach them how to build their own house? We can help you do that. So, I'm trying to get organized here. These are the camps that we have available, and we'll be letting you know where we will be having these camps as well. Okay, we'll be back in a couple of minutes to the phone line.
It's said everyone has a story. China has almost 1.4 billion of them. From the mega cities to the vast countryside, from the ancient modern, it's our job to bring these stories to you, direct from one of the most rapidly changing nations on the planet.
I'm Laura Schmidt, and we're rediscovering China.
Today we're exploring marriage pressure.
我感觉我是个商品，感觉现在头上已经标着说打折。
Its causes, its consequences, and how China's singletons are fighting back. Go on a shopping trip on a Saturday afternoon in downtown Beijing and you might find something unexpected on offer.
报名吗这是？可以现场报名。可以现场报名啊。
The young men and women are making their way to a restricted area in the heart of the building. The details of the latest arrivals flash across a big screen, and the DJ is warming up the turntables. Then, there's salsa. Welcome to speed dating, Chinese style.
If you ever needed proof that what China does, it does big, just take a look at this speed dating activity. Over 200 singletons are estimated to show up today and take a shot at finding true love and finding it fast. But this really hasn't been what I expected of a speed dating session. There's been a lot of dancing, a lot of loud music, and a lot of bright lights. Not really the perfect environment to chat and meet new people.
But that doesn't seem to have deterred our eager participants. They are part of the latest wave of singledom. There are currently over 200 million single people of marriageable age in China. That's virtually equivalent to the populations of the UK, Germany, and France put together. This has created a marriage economy, a feature of which is huge speed dating activities like this. In Beijing alone, the organizer, a dating website, holds hundreds of these events every year.
纯粹来玩一下，那这里当然为了相亲了。嗯，没有，特别遗憾。啊，平时工作是职业画家和平面设计师，所以我的工作就特别宅，所以就没有机会接触很多的人，所以就是借这个机会过来看看。当然，大家就是参加这种活动的人，大多数都比较内向，所以说这种活动也比较不好搞。
In a society where a third of young women admit they prefer watching TV drama series to socializing, and two-thirds of young men confess they'd rather stay at home surfing the internet, the chances of meeting Mr. or Miss Right are obviously limited. And even when they make the effort, full-on physical contact with a total stranger can feel a bit awkward. What these speed dating events set out to do is make people come out of their shell and see if there's a spark.
大家都在说现在单身女生年纪大也没什么不结婚也没什么，但其实内心还是会着急，而且就是有时候突然想到我过完年27岁了，就是不是我不想找，是我真的找不到合适的呀。但毕竟大家都不想一个人过。因为这20多年了，连女生手都没牵过，特别着急。然后我爸我妈也每次都催我，他们都说过年的时候找不到女朋友就别回来了。
In China, traditionally the cutoff line for what is considered marriageable age is 25 for men and 23 for women. But times are changing and so-called late marriages are becoming the norm. At the same time, the pressure to seal the deal is growing. Young Chinese are becoming increasingly anxious about being left over.
我们最早的时候，六年前，应该我刚刚接触这一行业的时候，基本上都是适婚年龄，二十七八岁、二十八九岁就觉得很年轻了。但是现在不一样了，现在我们可能有二十二三岁的女孩子，在学校的女孩子还有过来找要找女男朋友，就是年龄越来越低龄化。Zhang
Pengkun is a professional matchmaker with the largest dating website in China. She serves its VIP clients. While professional matchmaking is hardly a new concept in China, through the internet it has experienced a revival as services are moving online. The dating website Ms. Zhang works for claims to have around 200 million users.
哎呀，我一直跟进的一个男会员终于有消息了，得给他打一个电话。哎，你好，请问是张先生对吗？ 哎，你好，我是百合网的顾问张鹏坤，然后其实有一些您具体的这个情况，我还想多跟您聊聊，可以吗？因为我看您是38岁，1米76的身高，然后是在美国留学回来，目前是一个单身的状态哈，有过婚姻经历吗？
嗯。This kind of one-on-one dating advice is not cheap. The fees start at around $1,500 and can run up to over $7,000. Her clients do not want to reveal their identity, as being single is still considered a sensitive topic in China. And so it's only through talking to Ms. Zhang that we can get an insight into their dating wants and needs.
有责任心，然后最好是事业上有一点小成就。那男人呢，往往都是这样，就是哎，我看中的首先是年轻漂亮，然后相处之后是性格脾气。好，今天要接待的两位会员，男士已经到了，就是这么休闲装就过来了，是吧？<笑>好，来，咱们这边来。 男生坐这边吧，一会儿女孩子有包啊什么的就放在这边舒服一点啊。然后可能会比较热，脱了外套。我看看整理一下，帅不帅？喝点什么呀？咖啡还是水？
水就行。
行嘞，那等一下啊。好。哎，亲爱的，来了。怎么样？路上还堵车吗？
还行。
还可以哈。那个小李啊，已经到了。哎。 爱的，快过来，两个人认识一下。这是小刘，然后这是李先生，两个人认识一下，握个手吧。已经很长时间就期待这次见面了，那你们俩聊聊啊，然后我先过去。行嘞，好。女孩子更为迫切，啊，他们觉得，比如说我见了几个人之后还是不可以，那我再去，你快一点，快一点给我介绍。啊，那男人一般可能会没有那么急迫了，他会觉得说，哦，那好，没有遇到合适的，没关系，我现在35岁，我45岁的时候可以照样的找女朋友。
This rush to get married, especially for China's women, is not a new phenomenon. In fact, it has a long history.
那中国很多人都会说，不孝有三哈，无后为大。那么呢，一到了一定特定的年龄，你还没有结婚，还没有要结婚要孩子，那这件事情本身而言，就是父母会觉得面子上过不去。另外呢，还有就是孩子也会觉得，那我孝顺父母啊，我应该是首先要满足他们的心愿，包括也会有这样，就是到您这儿来，我能不能不去考虑结婚？啊，但是你是为了就是让我的父母知道我在做这件事情，啊，也会有这样的情况。
In the face of this immense pressure to bring home a partner, particularly over Chinese New Year, young Chinese have become incredibly creative in how to appease their parents. One option is to rent a fake boy or girlfriend online. So let's take a look how that works. This website's name translates as rentafriend.com. Their banner says their members offer services including traveling and meeting parents. There's even the possibility of a fake marriage. Users have profiles similar to social media sites and can upload photos, so potential partners can get a good look. Upon registering, I get asked a few rather personal questions, including my height, weight, and body shape.I'm not inclined to be entirely truthful. Signing up is simple enough. Now all I need to do is pick a person to pose as my boyfriend and get in touch. But what do their services actually include? So on one of the biggest forums in the Chinese web, we've discovered this post by a male person who offers their services as a fake boyfriend for Chinese New Year. So as you can see, it's a really detailed post.And services range from going shopping with you for around $3 per hour to watching a movie at just over $1 per hour. He'll also go and see your parents, a little bit more expensive, at just over $7 per hour. And then there is the possibility of getting physical. So you can have a regular kiss for just under $1, fairly inexpensive, or French kissing for just over $1.And then, from what we can tell, there are also more intimate services on offer. So whether this is a fake boyfriend or something else is entirely up to you. While we can't verify how serious that post was, this one seemingly is. We decide to get in touch with the young man advertising himself. He replies within minutes. As I pretend to be a Chinese girl facing marriage pressure, it occurs to me that you never really know who is on the other side of that screen. Is this really a good solution?
I wouldn't say it's probably a changing society. So for the old generation, they have very formulaic type of life, what is good and what is bad, but not the case for the new generation. So therefore, there's quite a lot of conflicts.
OK, 好，我们继续啦。
In 2013, Professor Wang published a book on the economics of love and marriage. He is skeptical of the rent-a-boyfriend business.
I'm not entirely sure I really like that. But if you think that the old generation cannot change and there's no way to communicate, Well, why not, right? I mean, it makes life a lot easier for everyone and makes people a lot happier for everyone. So, but however, I think that if I would like to say is maybe it is a good thing to try to get your parents to understand the problem rather than pretending the problem does not exist.
Renting a fake partner is a relatively new concept. A majority of young Chinese still choose to deal with their parents' nagging head-on. Fei Wei is one of them. She is from Zhejiang province and works in Shanghai. She has a good degree and a good job. In her free time, she teaches floristry.
哎，这个绣球就是国产的绣球，就只有这个颜色的，对不对？有没有稍微可以放的久一点的？
But none of her achievements seemed to matter the day she turned 25.
我过了25岁之后，我妈只要跟我打电话，说任何事情，她最后可能绕绕绕绕，都会绕到这个啊，为什么还没有找男朋友啊？最近有什么最新情况啊？想跟大家在一起聊天，聊到我的时候，聊着聊着就回到了这个话题。那个时候我就觉得好像有一点压力了。你妈最近怎样啊？
最近我妈没啥实际行动，但是她会在言语有言语暴力。25岁已经走下坡路了，这是我妈的经典名言。我现在已经是一个就是需要打折才能出售的货。那她怎么把你出售啊？现在看起来这个货也不太好卖，所以我妈最近比较消停。Fei Wei's hometown is just 40 minutes from Shanghai by high-speed train. However, the visits home are no longer a pleasure.
我现在把回家认为就是一个攻坚战，就我现在每次回去，我朋友说你去干嘛了，我都说我跟父母斗智斗勇去了，因为回家的话就可能就变成了全面战争了，就不止我要应付我爸妈，可能还有我爷爷奶奶、外公外婆，那还有我很多亲戚。Fei
Wei's mother is a small-town primary school teacher. Her colleagues and friends frequently ask about her daughter and whether she's still single. So she's merely passing on to her daughter the pressure she faces herself.
Fei Fei is still very young. Why are you so worried about her getting married as soon as possible?
基本上像她那个年龄，在我们这里基本上结婚了，就剩下她一个人还没找对象。特别是她的外公啊、外婆、爷爷奶奶都年纪大的，更要提了，他们是年纪大了。
This is Daniel Yen and his girlfriend Wei Tang. Daniel returned to China after completing his studies in the UK and now manages a book cafe in Nanjing. He's 26. He and his girlfriend have been dating half, and now they've decided it's time to tie the knot.
A lot of people say, I think, yeah, Western, I think too. I mean, one man can wait. The girls on the other side is just not like that. So my stress mostly comes from my girlfriend.
While for China's women, it's the prospect of aging and an idea that this makes them less valuable that creates marriage pressure. For China's men, it's mostly a financial headache.
我这边是比较惨，我大学毕业的时候，我想我说那个叫什么呢？那个反正我当时觉得我肯定是第一个结婚的，结果我到现在我周围的人结婚就差我一个没结婚，我有一个89年的朋友，现在孩子都3岁。
My girlfriend and her family are quite traditional, you know, like a traditional Chinese family. They wish that the wedding could be like huge or, you know, just like face stuff, right? Like they just don't want to lose face. So they kind of wishing the wedding should be like amazing.
For Daniel, at the moment, marriage pressure translates into financial pressure. Even though the couple have tried to minimize the cost, they are still looking at a cost of over $20,000 for their wedding. In Chinese culture, it is the norm for the groom's family to pay for the wedding. But Daniel earns less than $1,000 per month, and his father, he won't pitch in. But Daniel's future in-laws still think it's his responsibility as groom to pay.
其实，所以我觉得，其实在这边，其实结婚其实有时候挺没意思的。你把什么事情都，特别是物质方面的事情太掺杂在里面的话，我觉得结婚一点意思都没有。所以搞得我现在好像都没有什么太想结婚的一些想法了，就觉得
没有什么激情，
没有什么激情，累得不得了。
Nowhere is the pressure on young people to marry more visible than at the marriage market in Shanghai's People's Park. Here we see the extreme lengths parents are willing to go to in order to escape the embarrassment of an unmarried child. We're here at People's Square, where once again hundreds of people have come to the market. But it's not just any kind of market. There are no properties or items on offer here, but rather actual people.Sons and daughters who are single and whose parents are desperately trying to match them up with the highest bidder. The tension in the air is tangible. Height, age, income, education, household registration. A life's achievement summed up on a sheet of A4 paper pinned to an umbrella. Except the people on offer may not even know they're being advertised like this. And by their parents too, who hide from the cameras for fear of being exposed.
You look at the Renmin Gongyuan in Shanghai, the success rate is remarkably low. And because I think that China has changed way too much. So it is very difficult for them to understand what their children actually like. So I think that the success rate is going to be very, very low.
What is the effect of this marriage pressure on the economy, in your opinion?
Well, I think the more the pressure actually coming from too many single men rather than single women, especially you can see that housing prices being one of the chief results of such kind of pressure for men to be able to find a good wife. One of my colleagues have done research in this and find out that this actually has been rather significant effect in pushing up housing prices.
Some people offer a slightly different take on who is affected more by marriage pressure, men or women. One of them is Joy Chen. She wrote a book advising young women in China not to marry before reaching 30. In this, she was encouraging them to fly in the face of the stigma of being a leftover woman, a term coined by the Chinese media almost a decade ago.
From a demographic standpoint, the leftover woman label is completely inaccurate. There are many more leftover men in society than there are leftover women. Yet this stigma persists. It starts to make women desperate. I mean, I've had women who tell me they're 20 and they're leftover, right? So women start to get very desperate as they near age 30 and say, if I don't marry the next guy who comes along, if I don't grab him and trap him,then it may be too late.
But that, argues Ms. Chen, is a potentially disaster. In her book, she encourages young women to first focus on becoming the person they want to be, to build a career, and most importantly, to wait for the right guy to come along. A marriage sealed in haste, she warns, won't end well.
I've seen studies that say that in Beijing and Shanghai, for people under age 30,who get married, the divorce rate is 60%. So I think it also comes back to a fundamental question about security. You know, I think that question really goes to the heart of this question of marriage and a basic assumption that marriage will bring you en chinguan. In fact, for the majority of young women in some of these big cities, marriage will lead to the exact opposite, which is divorce.
An upsurge in divorces resulted from the so-called first wave of singledom in China's cities. In the 1950s, the country's first marriage law finally enabled women to file for divorce. The 1970s saw a second wave after educated young men and women sent to the countryside from the city under a government policy were allowed to return home. In many cases, they left behind a spouse in the provinces. Then, in the 90s, China's opening up and reform led to a third wave as people questioned traditional family values. This latest wave was kicked off by rapid economic development and the increased independence of Chinese women.
从男交男朋友这个角度来说，我觉得它是一种浪费时间，因为我觉得风险不可控，它而且它所要承担的风险非常的高，它没有起到一个对事业的一个加速剂的作用，反而是一个包袱。你是怎么看待我现在的这样一个想法和状态
？OK， 乃至成本回报，你觉得交男朋友有什么成本呢？
我觉得成本回报是零的，如果他不能让我的生活锦上添花的话，我觉得人生不需要这一环的。
对啊，如果你觉得没有那就没有了，但是交男朋友有什么成本呢？没有什么成本吧？
有成本啊，时间成本啊，投入啊，包括情感沟通呀、啊、对啊。
那比方说有人陪你去玩呢，如果有一个你很喜欢一起去度假的人跟你去度假，你开不开心呢？
很开心啊。
然后你刚好在这个很开心的事情时候也认识了不同的朋友，对吧？这个是坏事吗？
不是坏事啊。
那这个有
来说是 OK 的。
这个有没有成本呢？
没有成本。
也没有成本啊，对吧？所以我不见得有成本啊、哦。
长期的维护是要成本。
那你不想维护的话，就不维护喽。如果你刚好认识了很新鲜的东西，然后这很新鲜的东西变成了你很回味的东西，那再变成你很想继续再吃的东西，也不见得是个坏事嘛。也没有什么成本嘛，对吧？这问题是你要遇不遇得上喽。
What do you think is better for the economy? Staying single, being married?
Well, then it depends on what you mean by the economy, right? Economics is about maximizing what we call the happiness or utility of human beings. And as a liberal economist, my belief is that do whatever that pleases you most probably maximizes the happiness of the society more.
In 2001, The Economist magazine highlighted the importance of single women to an economy.As more of China's women are choosing to stay single and becoming increasingly independent, they consume more, spend more, and thereby contribute more to the economy.
If there are a lot more single women, we probably should have more.
Back in the year 1843, a man was born who, during his lifetime, was to have a profound effect on literally millions of people.His name was Russell Herman Conwell. He became a lawyer, then a newspaper editor, and finally a clergyman in 1881. It was during this latter period that an incident occurred which was to change his life and the lives of countless others. One day a group of boys came to Dr. Conwell at his church and asked him if he would be willing to instruct them in college courses. They wanted a college education but lacked the money to attend. He told them he'd do all he could, and as the boys left, a thought.An idea began forming in Dr. Conwell's mind. He asked himself, why couldn't there be a fine college for poor but deserving young men? Here was a great idea, and he went to work on it at once. Almost single-handedly, Dr. Conwell raised between $6 and $8 million with which he founded the now well-known Temple University of Philadelphia. It was how he raised this money that I want to tell you about. He raised the money by giving lectures all over the country, more than 6,000 of them.And in each he told a story called Acres of Diamonds. This was a true story which had affected him very deeply, just as it affected his audiences. It was the story of a farmer who had settled in Africa. This farmer had heard the exciting stories of other African settlers who had made millions by discovering diamond mines. Realizing the African continent was rich in diamonds, the farmer could hardly wait to sell his farm and search for diamonds himself.He spent the rest of his life wandering the vast African continent, searching for the gleaming gems which brought such high prices on the markets of the world, but without success. Finally, in a sudden fit of despondency, broke and desperate, as I remember the story, he threw himself into a river and drowned. During this time, the man who had bought his farm one day found a large and unusual stone in the stream which cut through the property. It turned out to be a great diamond of enormous value. And then he discovered that his farm was covered with them. It was to become one of the world's richest diamond mines. Now, the first farmer had owned literally acres of diamonds, but had sold them for practically nothing in order to look for them elsewhere. If he had only taken the time and study to know what diamonds looked like in their rough state, and had first thoroughly explored the land he had owned, he would have had the millions he sought, right on the land he had been living upon. What so profoundly affected Dr. Conwell and subsequently thousands of others was the obvious fact that each of us is, at this moment, standing in the middle of his own acres of diamonds. If we will only have the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will usually find that it contains the riches we seek, whether they be financial or intangible or both. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's make sure that our own is not just as green, or perhaps even greener. While we're looking at other pastures, other people are looking at ours. There's nothing more pitiful to my mind than the person who wastes his life running from one thing to another, like the first farmer, forever looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and never staying with one thing long enough to find it. For no matter what your goal may be, the road to it can be found somewhere in the work in which you now find yourself. It wasn't until he was completely paralyzed, for example, and was forced to reach into the resources of his mind, that a Wisconsin farmer got the idea of producing exceptionally good meat products on his farm, and one of the country's largest meatpacking companies was born. His farm contained acres of diamonds, too. He had just never seen them before. A paper salesman found a dirty drinking glass in his hotel room and gave his company the idea of manufacturing paper cups, an idea that solved his financial problems for life. An insurance man got the idea of going back to all the people in his files and really working with them, serving them the way they should be served. That year, he wrote an additional $700,000 of insurance, made the million-dollar roundtable, and found he no longer had to approach cold prospects, that by working with the people he had already sold and on their referrals, he had acres of diamonds right in his filing cabinet. A man out west amassed a fortune with a single small gas station. In the beginning, when things were tough, he would ask himself each morning, "What can I do to increase my service to my customers?" He still asks that question of himself each morning when he gets up, and while he could have retired years ago a wealthy man, he continues to dominate the business in his area by thinking of new and better ways to be of service. Do you know what the so-called average man would have done in this last case? He would have been worried about how bad business was, because in the beginning my friend had a hard time just feeding his family. When one day a man would have driven in the station in a big shiny car, this average man, seeing the wealthy customer, would have said to himself, "I ought to be in his business instead of mine." You see, the average man believes some businesses are better than others, instead of realizing the truth that there are no bad businesses. There are just those people who do not know enough to see the opportunities in the work they're in. Jobs don't have futures. People do. No matter what our work happens to be, it's our business. We're its manager. If we can see no future or opportunity in it, it isn't because it's not there, but only because we can't see it. One time another farmer poked a tiny pumpkin into an empty 1-gallon jug. The pumpkin grew until it completely filled the jug and could grow no more. When it was ripe, the farmer broke the glass jug and had a pumpkin which had assumed the jug's exact shape. In life, each of us does a similar thing. We poke ourselves into jugs of our own deciding, and we can grow no larger. But let's be mature enough to realize that it is we who do the poking, not the job, nor the company, nor the territory, nor the economy, nor the times. We do it. We should dispense with limitations and realize there is virtually no limit to our growth and development on the land on which we now find ourselves. Above all, keep this thought in mind as often as you can, on and off the job. Somewhere within the work you are now doing, there lurks an opportunity which will bring you everything you could possibly want for yourself and your family. In closing, here are 12 points to remember. 1. If we will develop the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will find it contains the riches, tangible and intangible, we seek. 2. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's realize our own pasture is unlimited. 3. That there are no bad jobs, but that it's the way in which we go about our work which makes it good or bad. 4. That we poke ourselves into jugs beyond which we cannot grow. Let's remove the limitations we've set upon ourselves. 5. that only preparation can ensure our taking advantage of the opportunities which will present themselves in the future, opportunities which are around us now. 6. Put your imagination to work on the many ways and means of improving what you're now doing. 7. Learn all you can about your job, your company, and your industry. 8. Since there's no limit to the growth of your industry, it must follow there is similarly no limit on your growth potential within that industry. 9. Our dynamic and growing economy needs and will well reward the uncommon man who seeks a place in this growth. 10. Begin to build your library of reference material pertaining to your company, industry, job, and on how to better serve and get along with people. 11. Set aside an hour a day for this study and research. And 12. Remember the story of the Acres of Diamonds. This is Earl Nightingale. Thank you.
Kick 'em when they're down. Kick 'em when they're down. Kick 'em when they're down. Kick 'em all around. Ghana, West Africa. When I was 7, I was brought to this country and forced into a system I knew nothing about. This is me. I was held as a slave in a religious shrine.
What crime is this child paying for?
Her uncle committed adultery.
Thousands of women across West Africa have lost their freedom because of a practice called chokoshi, and it's still happening.
Does she know why she's here?
Now I'm on a journey to try and understand what happened. To find answers to questions I've had on my mind for years. What is chokoshi? And why did my family give me away?
Hey, this is Brigitte. Yeah, you're my Uber.
My name is Brigitte Sosu Perini. I live and work in Accra, the capital of Ghana. It's the city where I feel most free.
Did you just start it or this morning?
This morning.
This morning.
But my first memories in this country are among my darkest. I was trafficked here from my home in neighboring Togo and held in captivity as part of a practice called chokoshi.
You never heard of their belief system, chokoshi?
Yes. It is even practiced in my hometown. And some people are still there.
Some girls are still there.
Yes, some girls are still there.
Chokoshi is illegal and it's not often talked about in Accra. But to my surprise, Richard tells me his own grandmother is living as a chokoshi.
But to them, they are self that are involved. They are not selling cards because they believe in the system.
This same system robbed me of my childhood. 20 years later, I'm on a journey to understand what really happened. I was told I had to leave home to go and live with my uncle. I was placed on the back of a motorbike. I didn't even know the driver. I thought it was the strong wind causing my tears, but I think I was actually crying because I was being taken away from my family. And then I was left at a place I had never been before. I didn't even understand the language. They took away my clothes and wrapped me in a purple cloth. They even took away my name.
How old is this little girl?
7 years old.
Do you know why you're here?
In 1997, I was filmed by an American news crew at the place I was being held, a shrine run by a priest dedicated to the worship of deities. I was labeled a chokoshi, a wife of the gods, paying for a crime committed by a family member.
Do you miss your parents?
Yes.
I remember feeling a range of emotions.
Neglect, rejection, isolation. Adding to that, the idea of that could have been my life. That could have been my life. That could have been my life. And that's why I feel like I don't watch it much.
But this report changed everything. With the help of a charity called International Needs, an American viewer flew to Ghana to negotiate my release. His name was Kenneth Perini, and he will become my adoptive father. He took me to the U.S., where I spent the next 13 years. I was relieved to be out after about a year in the shrine, but there was a huge emptiness that could never be filled.
I was still thinking about my Togolese family, my birth family. But it was in my heart and my mind. I never stopped thinking about them.
A few years later, my American dad and I agreed I should go and look for them. The charity that freed me helped me find my village and filmed my return. My family had no idea I was coming. I didn't even know if I'd find all of them alive. I hadn't seen my mother since I was 7 years old. I found out I even had a little brother who I had never met. That day was so surreal, almost like a dream. Now that I'm older, I feel ready to explore the cultural background of Chokoshi. It's practiced in parts of Ghana, Togo, and Benin by various ethnic groups, one of which is the Ewe. I'm driving into Ghana's Volta region, a lush area of lakes and rivers where Chokoshi is most prevalent.
This was kind of like a last minute thing, like this isn't nothing I've been saving up for or anything like that. I came across one and like I really liked it. I was just showing it to my mom, like, and we got to thinking, like, I'm in college, I have a son, of course, a teen mother, and like having my own space but still not having to be away from my mom because like I love her and like I depend on her for almost everything that I do. This was a good alternative to that. So what we did was we looked for them, we browsed around. We found one at first, but it didn't really work out and I was like super bummed. And then we found this one, which is like even better. I'm gonna show y'all what it looked like before. I'm gonna insert a few pictures right here while I'm talking. Yeah, so before it, we bought it already completely finished, so we didn't have to go in and do the hardwood, because the way that they start out, I'm gonna insert a picture right here, it's kind of like this up here. So the whole building was like this. So this is like a shed, it's a tiny home build, that type of thing. We didn't have to do that much labor again because like the wall and the insulin, it is insulated. It has wall, it has flooring. The top is actually done to the shell. So that's the top. Everything was already done.
All right. I've been on the phone with radio stations. Oh, okay. I need an assistant to do some of this stuff. Anyway, today it's open mic. Any training topic you want to talk about, but we started off with an announcement, so I'm going to announce it again. We have 5 camps. We have 5 camps that we're announcing today. And we'll let you know the locations. That's why I was on the phone with, I'm in talks with 3 radio stations right now, because what we want to do is podcasts are fine, but podcasts is like shooting a global shotgun. we got people, you know, from all over the place. Listen, I mean, we have listeners in Brazil. We got them in the Philippines. We got them in different parts of Africa. Not all Africa, but many countries in Africa. But, you know, all that sounds good, but we need something more targeted. So I'm in talks with three radio stations right now so we can do a radio version of it. I mean, it'll be targeted, though. All right, because we have to target geographically and demographically for what we want to do. But anyway, so we have five camps. We have five camps. And the first camp actually is two, and I have it in the title of today's live stream. We have grown-ass man training camp. And that's the title, working title of a grown-ass man training camp. And we have 40 acres camp. Now let me name, before I explain what's involved with those two camps, we also have Camp 6521, relationship camp, or relationship preparation camp. And we have house builders camp. Now, if you go on our Facebook page, It's My House TV, I posted. There's a picture of me. I got three pictures of me up there. So we'll be. This is not on. It's not online. A teeny bit of it, maybe 5 to 10%, will be online, and that's, you know, how to get prepared and safety and all that other stuff. But 90% of what we do with these five camps I'm naming. 90% will be it's offline, and it's offline in all locations. So I'll be right there with you. All right. So on our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV on Facebook, I believe did I post those pictures? Yeah, there are three pictures of me building. So I want you right there with me. So here are the five camps, all right, going all through the wintertime. It's September now, mid-September right now. All right, we have a house builders camp, and that's the fundamental core of all these camps. And we're getting into building off-grid housing. That's what we're dealing with, off-grid housing, where you don't have to worry about an electricity bill. You'll have electricity, you know, because we do the solar thing. Okay, you'll have water, but no municipal water. All right. And a sanitation system, too. So we teach all the off-grid stuff, which is nothing new. It might be new to a lot of you, but, you know, it's nothing new. All the stuff we talk about has been around for ages. And a gazillion people around the world, including right here in the United States, they do this. All right. So this is for people that want to be disconnected and have a more sustainable, financially sustainable lifestyle. So house builders camp, that's the fundamental core with all of it. The next one is grown-ass man training camp. Now this whole series was inspired by a series of text messages that, I don't know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I was going back and forth with a high school friend of mine. You know, I said, you know what? We need to put this put this out there. So now, grown ass man training camp includes and starts off with the core camp, which is house building. But the distinction is with grown ass man, it's the reason why you're building these tiny houses or houses. You're building them so they can be assets that you can either you build it and sell it, or you build it and rent it out. And there's we say that you need to have a why. Why are you building this place to sell, or why are you building this place to rent out? Okay. And you're really going to have to do a combination of the two. Why? Because some of you might have an issue with, a challenge with child support. Because the days of getting a second job or a third job where you physically have to go to that first and second or maybe third job, those days are like kind of limited. Now you got to think in terms of, and we covered this last week, if you're going to work remotely, you know, there was a guy that, and there's several people like this, that this has been going on for a while, that he works 11 jobs in 10 different states, and he makes like $1.2 to $1.5 million a year. He works remotely. He works from home. He has a laptop for each and every one of his remote. And this is 11 full-time jobs. So, and it's not an outlier. There are other people doing this. There's over 29 million Americans that work remotely. Many of them work remotely 5 days a week now. And several of them do work multiple full-time jobs, all remotely. So now with this, okay, you physically have to be there, but the payoff could be greater, and you can be right where you are locally. But the grown-ass man training camp, that is, all right, if you got to pay, you're building and selling or building and renting, or actually you're doing both. With the your reason why is you want to pay off a car loan, you want to pay back rent, you want to pay, and we'll have other things included in this. It just won't be housing. We'll bring other people in that some people might be landscapers, you know. So you'll be exposed to other people that have started businesses that business basically extinguishes or neutralizes any kind of outstanding debt that they might have or expense that they might have. All right. So that's with the grown-ass man training camp. All right. The third camp is relationship preparation or relationship problem-solving camp, financial literacy camp. Once again, it goes back to housing. And, you know, you got a financial issue in your marriage, then you might want to look at it. What can we do? What kind of resource that we do have and that we can basically use those resources to resolve any type of financial debt that, you know, or expense that you might have. Camp number four is Camp 6521. That's a housing outreach. That's based on Isaiah 6521, which I'll let you read that, whatever translation of the Bible that you might have. And all these are hands-on. That's why I say go to our Facebook page. And you see three pictures of that black guy, that's me. I'll be doing that, and you'll be doing that right along with me as we build. Because we're building to solve personal problems. Personal finance problems. Okay. We're building, you know, for our families, or we're building for other families. But And you'll see some of my friends there. So I want you to be one of my friends, or I want to be one of your friends as we build. So like I say, it's 10% of what we do is online at the beginning, but then 90% is dress properly, have the right clothes, the shoes, footings, and gloves, and goggles, and all that, and we build. And then the last one is for the Ados and reparations crowd, or the people that said they promised us 40 acres, or they promised our ancestors 40 acres, but they didn't give it to us. Well, the 40 acres camp is your opportunity here in 2022 and 2023 or 2024, 20, whatever year you might join up with us, is we're teaching you how to buy land by the acre, where to buy it, what's a good price, what's a bargain price, and we don't need to talk about what I've done. No, we want to have what you have done. So while you're waiting on your reparations check, and while you're waiting on whatever Ados is waiting on, African descendants, whatever you're waiting on, okay, this is what you can do right now. That's what the 40 acres thing. And what I'm saying is the lion's share of you that take the 40 acres, now, the 40 acres thing, class, there's no building in that. There's no building. The 40 acres is identifying where you can get 40 acres of land, an affordable price, or even the person that works on a fry machine at McDonald's or Burger King, even they can afford it. Okay. You don't need a college degree or nothing like that. But the 40, so I'm betting that you can get 40, the average person, within the sound of my voice, the average person can gain 40 acres of land way before you'll get 40 acres from the government or a reparations check or whatever, which way they're going to work reparations. All right, that's what I'm saying. So when you do get the reparations check, you just got a little, you got gravy on the cake or the cherry on the top. So that's now you're not going to get 40 acres. I'm telling you, people, right now. Okay, people. This is what I like about the free enterprise system. Okay, and one of the topics we're going to cover is inequality or equality. What we all have equal, if we wake up in the morning and we're fortunate enough to live 24 hours at a time, what we all have equal, what everybody within the sound of my voice, what you have equal to Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, King Charles III, the Skid Row bum, the Skid Row person, okay. The mother with multiple kids, the dad with multiple kids. The common denominator that we all have is we all have the exact amount of time in the day. So this 40 acres, let's say we start out with 10 people. Okay. One person, okay, they might learn enough and they might have enough money where they can get 1 acre of land. Another person might have enough where they can only get a quarter acre of land, but it's a quarter acre. Another person might be able to afford 3 or 4 acres of land. Another person might be able to afford 10. All right. Another person appear that they don't have any resources, but they have the social capital, and they might be able to get 100 acres of land. Now, you get 100, you know, it's easier, now, in my opinion, based on my experience, it's easier to get 100 acres of land than it is to get an apartment in the city. The challenge is it costs less money. If you know where to look, it's dramatically a lot less money to get 100 acres, if you know where to look. But if you get the 100 acres of land, all right, you're going to need partners. You're going to need partners, and they have to be the right partner. So it might be better just to chip off maybe something a little smaller. But those are the 5 camps that we have. The 40-acre camp, and that's all about buying land, where you will actually, because we're not, I don't sell any digital products. There's no the course you're going to take is you actually doing this shit. Okay? So I don't sell any courses or nothing like that. You're actually, we're going to actually go out and buy. All right? We're not buying together. You're buying for whatever your personal interest is, you're buying for you. Now, if you got a cadre of people with you, that's fine. But, you know, and you might be able to only afford a tenth of an acre, a quarter of an acre, or 1 acre, whatever it might be. But we're going to stick with you until you get to 40 acres. All right. Once again, this is inspired by the, because the Ados people, I bet you we can, the average person listen to me, you can get 40 acres quicker than anybody will get reparations here in the United States. But that's the whole, anyway. So we got the 40 acres camp. We got the camp 6521, which is based on Isaiah 6521. We have the relationship camp, which is based on what couples did before slavery was abolished. And I see right after slavery was abolished too. How, you know, there were slave, former slaves who became millionaires. We talk about that occasionally here, but a lot of those, it was mom and pa, they got together and, well, my great-grandparents, they left behind 88 acres. We still have it in the family. We haven't developed it, but it's there, 88 acres. We got the grown-ass man training camp, and we have the house builders camp. All of those include house building, because that's the fundamental thing on that. So 425-520-0605. Call or text me for that. And some of these, they'll be in different locations geographically. 90% of the content is hands-on in your particular location. And we're working on announcing that also through, we're in talks with 3 radio stations in 3 different cities in 3 different states right now. Because what we're looking to do is build an offline community to basically accelerate what we're doing. All right, so Jacksonville, Florida, New Orleans, Louisiana, and Chicago, the Chicagoland area, we're working on being on radio. Live radio in those 3 cities with a radio version of It's My House. Actually, it won't even be It's My House. That program, which will mirror, it'll be a radio version of our Clubhouse talks, because on Clubhouse we can say and do anything we want to, even more so than we do here on Blog Talk. But we have, it's called Don't Sell Mama's House. We have a version called Don't Sell Mama's House or Don't Sell Grandma's House. And that'll be the radio version of that. We'll sneak a little bit of It's My House in there. But that's all designed basically where we'll have an offline working presence along with video. On radio, we can't say anything, but we have to watch our language and all that. So any ideas on that, or if you want it in your neck of the woods, let me know. And we'll be doing things with teenagers building. But like I said, 8 to 108, you know. All right, let's go to the phone lines here. 407, your mic is open.
Grand Rising, good morning, L.A. This is Beata with Health and Wellbeing, Soul Purpose Healing, Blog Talk Radio. And I just wanted to share a story in my neighborhood here. When you talk about don't sell grandma's house, we had, you know, in every neighborhood, there's usually a hoarder house. Every neighborhood I've been spent any time in, I walk the neighborhood and I'm like, ooh, what's going on in that house? Because half the shit's out on the yard, you know. Or if you open the garage, you can't even see the garage because they got so much stuff in there. So recently, this hoarder house that since I've been here almost a year, actually, almost 8 months. And this hoarder house has been the sad point of the neighborhood. So they recently sold this house. Now, I found out that Grandma used to live in this house, and she moved to Ohio. So I guess the grandchildren or the children, I don't know, took over, but they created a hoarder house because all their stuff, their consumer goods flowing out into the yard, and it was just a sad sight to walk by this house. So finally, it got sold because of taxes. They couldn't pay their taxes. But they got all this. It just blew my mind to find out recently why the house got sold on an auction for lack of paying taxes. But they must have had at least thousands of dollars of stuff. Eventually, it would have been worth thousands. Now it's worth nothing because it's been in the yard. Rain got to it and all that. And the people who bought it, they emptied the whole house, everything on the streets, on the yard now. So it's one thing not to sell Grandma's house, but if Grandma leaves you the house, you got to take care of it, and you can't be a consumer freak or a consumer addict, in my opinion. You got to start small. When you talk about buying land, my experience is this. I have about 1/4 acre that I'm managing here in my little space, and that's work for me. But it's daily maintenance. I have a mind to maintain this yard, maintain my house, make sure the house stays clutter-free, make sure the yard stays clutter-free because I'm pulling a lot of weeds and growing food. So when you don't want to sell Grandma's house, that means you got to maintain the house and maintain the land, trim trees, plant food. So it means if you're not going to sell Grandma's house, you have to become a conscious landowner. So the unconscious landowner, that's what happened to this house in this neighborhood. Got sold for taxes because they didn't know how to take care of it, but they knew how to buy a lot of stuff, which is a mental illness, I believe, I realize. If you ever watched a hoarder show, you know those people have a lot of mental problems. So you got to maintain your health mentally if you're not going to sell Grandma's house. And then that means you're consciously aware of you got to maintain your land. I don't care if it's 5 acres or 50 acres. Somebody's got to maintain that land, and that means you have to have some kind of income to pay for the taxes because that's the main liability is taxes. If you own the land free and clear, then you're going to have to pay taxes.
Nobody owns the land free and clear, but nobody owns the land free and clear in the United States. Nobody.
Well,
can't name one person. If you got to pay taxes, you don't own it outright.
Oh, I'm saying Prince Israel, the guy we interviewed on my YouTube, he doesn't owe any debt on the land. He doesn't have a mortgage or anything on the land, but he does pay taxes. Right. So you got to be mindful of what your responsibility, your liability is for the house and the land. Don't neglect the house. It would buy because you're putting all that money into consumer goods. That's what these people obviously did in this neighborhood. All that shit on the, I call it shit because it ain't worth nothing now. It's all moldy and mildew and decayed because they just collected it and didn't do anything with it. Sad in a way because it's a mental illness that creates that type of environment. But going forward, we want to help people, yeah, buy land, but you got to maintain it and keep your set your righteous mind and be conscious about how to maintain and care for the land and the house.
Well, one thing I've learned, I get what you're talking about. One thing I've learned about this word called trash. Trash is basically a term that people use when they don't know how to repurpose what most people call trash.
True.
Because I'm just going to name this village that off the top of my head. There's a village in Germany called Feldheim, Germany. And they basically power a lot. They gain a lot of the electricity that they have in that town. Not all of it, because they run on solar too. Is basically cow shit and pig shit. They know basically how to take that waste and convert it into electricity. So, and the same thing with you know, Earthships. Earthships are basically homes where, and I took a 7-day retreat on this, where they take things that people threw away, I mean, plastic bottles, glasses, I mean, you know, Coke bottles, beer cans, blown out tires that are no good. And they use things that people threw away, which most people would call trash. And essentially we built two cottages. We built a cottage from the ground up using this stuff, along with some straw bale. And matter of fact, on our Facebook page, It's My House TV, there are three pictures of me, and that's what we're building. We built a cottage. Basically, there was a little bit of brand new lumber that we used, but the majority of the structure was built with stuff that people threw away, trash. It didn't look like that after we completed it, and I'll post that picture later today. But we did that. We finished off another cottage. They call them tiny houses now. This is all before the tiny house craze. So it all depends on, but that's why we're doing these camps, because a lot of people don't know how to, everything you're saying, you're correct. Because a lot of people just, you know, I think really as a required class, if I was king of the United States educational system, which there's no such thing, but if I were, I would require from grade 1 to grade 12 household maintenance, because you're absolutely right. A lot of people do not know anything about maintenance, and they even poo-poo the janitor or the person who cleans the toilets because they think it's a lowly job, but it's a very important job, because if you don't maintain stuff or you don't know how to maintain it, it's going to go downhill. And it's going to get more, the more you let it go downhill, the more expensive it is to repair it or replace it. So you are absolutely right. And for some reason, historically, many people, if we go up our ancestors' tree, black or white in this country, or even Asian, that's how a lot of our ancestors made it. They were good at maintenance, you know, keeping things running. But in our age of comfort and convenience, a lot of us have not been taught how to maintain. And that's a big part of generational wealth, maintenance, you know. Because if you look at the royal family, you know, essentially what they're doing is they're maintaining what King so-and-so did. I have to look it up and get you the correct name. They're maintaining what the first king who set all this up. They're just maintaining, you know, what was put on the table centuries ago. Because if you look at, I'm two examples, the royal family of England and the royal families of Africa. I think there are three of them right now. And a lot of these Asian families had these Chinese food carryouts. The common denominator with all those entities is they're maintaining what the previous generation and the previous generation before that started. Just like with the store where George Floyd died, right? That convenience store. The guy who runs that store, and he's got some audio somewhere or a video on YouTube, he's third generation. That store has been in this family for, he's there on the third generation. He says that he's never worked another job in his entire life so far other than for the family business. So it's just like with the royal family, from the time they're born, they are trained, they are educated on how to maintain the family business. The three royal families in Africa, and you can look them up online, just look up monarchs in Africa, there are three current ones. Those children, those adults now, they are made, but their children are trained from the cradle to until they die on how to maintain the family business. The people who, with these Chinese food, I got about three or four Chinese restaurants around me. They're trained on how to maintain the family business. Even if they have to move to another geographical location and start up, but they're trained on how to do it. So you're absolutely right. And that'll be a part of all these camps. You have to, well, you maintenance. Maintenance is very important.
Well,
Elvis, let me ask you this. You've got grandchildren. How are you training them in the maintenance department?
Shoot. I played chess with my grandson last night, and he got mad because I beat him. He's been beating me, though, for the last 2 days, and I finally beat him. He got so mad. You know what he said? I hate you, Grandma. So I have to manage. So the number one priority for me is helping him develop emotional intelligence. So
right.
What comes first now is his emotions, because he gets really angry and says I hate you too often. So that's my main concern with him. But I also have to help him develop other areas of wisdom.
Teach him how to play?
Yeah.
Well,
he's still really young.
Yeah.
He's playing chess at Taekwondo. They go to this martial arts thing after school, and so they play. He plays chess there. That's how he's getting good, because he's got older kids teaching him, and he's playing with them. And then his dad just bought him a Harry Potter chess set, so he's really excited. He bring the whole thing over here and set it. He got me setting it up, and he's like smiling like he gonna crucify me. And he did for 2 days. He's like three in a row he beat me. But I said, okay, I gotta really pay. You know what chess is about? Really paying attention.
True.
Because you gotta watch the whole board. The way he beat me, because I'm looking over here on the left side trying to protect this and that. Next thing I know, he's taking my king on the right side.
All right. Well,
so
he's in a good environment.
That's how I beat him. He stopped. He lost his train of thought. He was looking at all the activity I was doing. You know, it's like distract him over here on the right side. I'm moving a lot of pieces. Next thing I know, I move my bishop in the corner, and I got a straight angle at the king. And he's like, he caught him totally off guard. Anyway, to get back, that's the lesson he's learning now as far as emotional intelligence, and then from there we'll go into, okay, what are you going to do with your life now? You don't need to go to college. You can play chess. When he becomes a chess master, that's his job, you know, for that's the way I see it.
Well, that is a career for some people.
I'm trying to train him to develop his own career and entrepreneurship, not go to somebody's college and be brainwashed.
And for
That's
those
how
who are just wondering, Viata is a college graduate herself, so she's gone through the process. She's just giving her opinion. I agree with you a lot of that. I graduated from college, too. So,
no. Even becoming, you know, children used to be told, well, you should be a doctor. We want you to be a doctor, a lawyer. You don't have to go to college to do that type of work. You can do a different type of health professional work without going to college, but you got to create your own, you know, business. And now engineers and all that kind of stuff. I know one of your listeners is strong on college and in science and all that, but their creative minds are going to find a way to get around that four-year brainwashing institution.
Now, you have been, and I don't know if you just still do it, but you were a professional person when it came to household maintenance. You know, keeping things up and all that type of thing. Oh, I know what. You know, the project that you had, the investment project that you have with the two other people up there in Orlando. Now, how is maintenance handled on that property?
that we hired someone to do the cleaning, and then the guy who I'm in partnership with, he does all the outside work, and he's a contractor. So we used to help clean the inside, me and one of the other ladies, but we decided to hire somebody else to do the regular internal cleaning, and the outside is taken care of by the contractor.
Okay, so that's working out on that part, the maintenance part.
I guess. I don't have a lot of contact with the people.
Oh, yeah,
because
you were a paid professional with that for years, so that's why
I do house maintenance for friends. I have a senior citizen who's a friend. She pays me to come every 2 weeks to do little jobs around. Like, she has a back front that needs sweeping of back, and I do sweeping for her and pull weeds and all that. I spend a couple hours at her house and help her maintain the smaller things, and she has somebody else come and do all her cleaning. So, you know, it's about partnership. You were talking about, okay, you buy 100 acres of land or whatever, you're going to need some help.
You need partners when you get that large.
The more land you buy, the more help you're going to need. So you better start developing social capital and partnerships before you even think about buying land. You need to get to know the people you're going to be in business with.
Yeah, you're right.
Or partners.
Because that's like getting married.
It'd be a good idea to have some social events with those people, have dinners together, lunches, all that. Get to know those people. Talk about their childhood, were they a mama's boy or this or that, because that has a lot to do with how they're going to respond or react in crises or challenging situations.
Yeah, I agree with you. I definitely agree with you. Hold on, Bill. 410 area code, your mic is open.
Hotel, Brother L.A., and hello, Sister Viola. How you doing?
I'm good, Hotel. Thank you. How about you?
I'm doing great. And hello to that other fellow over there, too. Look, I've been listening to you here, Brother L.A. Are you, is this a traveling classroom that you're going to have for your projects?
Traveling and then permanent also because I got a base in Chicago, so I got people on the ground there already. I got people on the ground in New Orleans. Florida, I'm talking to a Jacksonville station because that's the biggest. It's not the closest outlet, but it's the biggest outlet to channel people into what I have in Florida. And then I got two people in North Carolina that are boots on the ground, but I'm still working with those two. So it'll be permanent. I want things to happen on a weekly basis, and then I'll travel to these places as well. But there'll be a local weekly boots on the ground project, and I'll announce those cities as they come. But I can tell you right now, the states, Florida, Illinois, primarily Chicago to Hopkins Park, and then North Carolina. I got a guy with the time in Roxboro, but I got another guy that lives near Charlotte. But I got some pastor that I think is near Charlotte. So I got to see how I can all fit into there, because once it starts, it's got to be a weekly thing. It can't be once a month. It's got to be weekly.
So how long is the teaching session?
Let's say no more than 2 hours a week.
But it's a weekly course that you're offering.
Right. It'll be weekly.
Okay, because I was asking, because what you're presenting in the template that you laid out, I think every kid needs to know that, and adults, really. But the thing is,
that's why I'm putting it out there, and that's why I broke it down to five different categories, because it some people, you know, they might be struggling with rent or whatever. So, all right, well, and I'm not saying this is a silver bullet, but, you know, five different categories, so five, you know, they pick which one they can roll into. And I'm also soliciting ideas because, you know, I basically I get a lot of ideas from you guys. So, you know, that's where I'm at right now with it. Because, matter of fact, the guy who inspired this is a friend of mine from high school, and he owes like about $11,000 in back rent, you know, via this whole COVID thing. So they gave him a notice that he's got to, you know, pay up or, well, they're going to go to court. So he doesn't have, now he's got the skill set. All right, he doesn't have the carpentry skill set, but he knows people that can help him build his own place. And I've told him, I said, man, why don't you just, you know, put this thing together, you know, and go into Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards, and build you something and be done with it. But he's taking another path. So I said, you know what, and he's a baby boomer. So I'm looking at, you know, there's a lot of baby boomers, there's a lot of you know, even teenagers, because if a person was taught this at 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, you know, I really think that behind toilet training, I mean, right, not too far after toilet training, kids should start learning how to build their own place. It might start off with a birdhouse or a dollhouse or something like that, but by the time you're 15 or 16, I got my learner's permit at 15. I got the driver's license at 16. I think right along with that, a person should learn how to build their own place.
Yeah,
debt
I agree
free,
with that.
No mortgages, nothing like that. Because it's a big problem globally. So that's the, you know, yeah. Five class.
That's why I was asking, because no one has that skill set in this younger generation. That's why I was asking questions. But the next thing, on the Strolling Marquee, in this blog talk page of yours, mm-hmm. Are you the guy chopping wood?
No. There's one picture where it's three pictures of me on that Strolling Marquee. If you go to our Facebook page, It's My House TV on Facebook, it's the same three pictures of me without the other pictures chopping wood. But I've chopped wood, though. When I was over in Germany, a friend of mine who owned a pub at the time, I never forget it. He came knocking on the door one day, and he needed some help. You know, chopping wood, man. It was cold and everything, and I had never chopped wood before. So, you know, I couldn't say no because I go to this dude's bar and whatnot. We were friends and everything. So, I said, all right, let me get dressed. So he took me by some sandwich place, the deli over there. You know, how many sandwiches you want? I said, well, two will be good for the day. And I was sitting up there. We were chopping wood. And that's just the way of life. I couldn't complain. I couldn't say I didn't. That was my learning curve. And another friend taught me how to chop wood. Okay. So I can chop wood now. I've done it. But at these sessions, it won't be any chopping wood. We'll have the materials that we're buying. We'll source from, you know, wherever, and we'll be building. So the three pictures of me on the Facebook page, it's My House TV. Same three pictures in the Strolling Marquee.
Okay. Me. Well, I can only get the Strolling Marquee here. I see this guy chopping wood, a white guy.
No, that's not me.
Are you the one?
Describe another one. I can tell you which one is me. It's me from different angles.
Okay, there's a guy with a sander here, with a plane sander.
That's not me.
There's a guy here that look like he's measuring some with gloves on.
That's, all right, the guy standing up, that's me.
The guy bent over. Yeah, he's kind of bent over, got a beard.
No, that's not me,
Okay, there's a guy nailing something, a petition.
And all right, with a baseball hat on?
No, this is a guy bent over here. He's got on a white T-shirt.
No. I had on a green T-shirt that day.
A green T-shirt?
Well, I don't know how well it shows up in that.
Most of these are white guys.
No, I'm black. Let me go.
Well, you ain't black, but, you know,
I'm black.
you ain't black, but, yeah, I know
it's three pictures of me. It's on the same building site.
Yeah, there's one guy holding up holding up the siding on a building here. With a look like a gray T-shirt or a blue T-shirt with a white.
Hold on, wait a minute now. Hold, you know what? I'm looking for. Okay, wait a minute.
I know you're light skinned.
No, I'm not yellow either.
Well, you brown skin.
It hasn't queued up yet. Wait a minute. Okay, let me. All right, let me go to the pictures here. Okay. There are three pictures of me in a row. One of them, I'm the only black guy in the picture. You see that one? I'm standing
up. Yeah,
a bunch
of guys holding up the side, and there's three white guys.
Yeah,
and there's
that's
a black guy
standing up.
On the left.
That's me standing up. And then the picture next to that is the back of my head with a baseball cap on. I'm nailing something. And then there's another picture of me. Those three are me.
Yeah, you got a baseball cap turned backwards.
Right, exactly. Those three pictures of me.
Yeah. Okay, now
and
I see
other pictures
you.
Ain't
okay.
me at all. Right.
Oh, okay.
I'll be working a lot along with you.
Okay. Well, now look. So, what is your fee?
I haven't decided that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to some people, because the main thing is I want people to, you know, if there's any fee, it's going to be for materials only. Okay. Because I'm not looking for a whole drove of people. I want something where we probably have at least no more than about 12 people. Okay, no more than about 12 people. So everybody can get to know everybody's name. I can remember everybody else's name. And we can put together a project within a relatively short period of time. And people can get some real hands-on experience.
So you wouldn't be interested in doing a camp?
Definitely, that's why I'm calling them camps.
Yeah, but I'm 40 saying
acre camp,
these.
Yeah,
these are church.
These are not one day events. Bare minimum,
right.
They're going to be weekends to maybe even 5 to 7 days.
Well, these kids go to a church camp. That's why I was asking.
Oh, okay. Well, once again, I'm soliciting ideas, and the stations that I'm talking to are basically religious stations.
Okay.
Because the reason why I'm not going direct to pastor, because I don't want to get into pastor's politics. Okay. You know, that's where I'm at with all that. So.
Hey, Brother Ellie, damn them, okay? These church camps has nothing to do with an individual Pastor, these church camps are owned by these Baptist associations and things like that, and the AME, mm-hmm. they have camps, and that's why I was asking you, you know.
Right.
But it has nothing to do with the individual pastor. These camps are manned, and they have their own administration and everything. They're just funded by the churches. That's why I was asking.
Oh, okay.
You know. Well, just to get an idea.
I didn't know there were church camps out there.
Oh, my God. L.A., you got to be kidding.
I'm serious, man. I guess I've been out of the loop too long.
I mean, that's right. You're a Catholic, don't you?
No, man. I go to anybody's church.
No, but you were raised up a Catholic because these churches...
I went to Catholic school for 3 years. I was Christian
right.
or Baptist. My mother, grandparents, and all those, they were Baptist. But I went to a Catholic school for 3 years. But I wouldn't consider myself a Catholic. I've gone to Catholic churches, masses. I've gone to... I've done stuff, with the Nation of Islam... Presbyterian, yeah. AME, I done got around Jewish synagogue, so
yeah,
I'm looking at them. They're all different lifestyles.
Well, these denominations have church camps where these kids go to in the summertime, and they do camping, and they have them in, what do you call these, arts and crafts and stuff like that. You know, that's why I was asking. But anyway. The other thing
well,
is,
well, you know
I
what? I'll be watching
you.
Church. I'll be watching church camp videos this afternoon. Then.
Okay. Well, the other thing I want to ask you is the guy in Roxborough that was homeless. Did you give him my suggestion? Did you give him my suggestion?
Not yet, because I haven't talked to him.
Okay.
Ahead,
about the temporary hiring services.
Oh, you know what? Matter of fact. You know what? Let me do that right now. Let me see if he's on.
No.
He's online.
No, I was just asking. Yeah, because
right
you know, I sent you a list of temporary hiring services in his area. I texted to you, but anyway,
okay.
Let me go, Sister Viata. I always got to call in when I hear your voice and I hear Bianca's voice. You know, y'all makes my day, and I just go in on a sign off. But anyway,
okay,
I just wanted
I appreciate
to know.
It. So,
yeah.
And I just sent him a note on that on Clubhouse. So let me take this last caller here because we're way over time. 3:14, your mic is open.
L.A.
Yes, sir.
Is the day still Thursday?
It's still Thursday.
I've been waiting since it's 10:15.
Man, I'm
oh
sorry
my goodness.
I got to get somebody. Get my mouth shut.
I missed the milkman, man.
Well, I'm sorry about that. I don't know if there's
we
such thing
do
as
better,
milk reparations. But, huh?
I had people that was going to call in and wanted to listen to me, and they gone on to work.
Yeah, it's almost 1. It may as well say it's 1 o'clock where I'm at.
Yeah,
I gotta
so
work
I
on that. Keep my mouth
man,
shut.
But I don't know what to say. I wanted to comment on Viata's grandson, but I had some good news. But it's gonna have to wait.
Well,
anyway,
have to wait.
I don't
want to
cost you no more money than you. I don't want to cost you no more money than what a conference call would. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, thank you,
no,
Bianca.
No, I'll pick your time.
All right, on that note, Beasley, I'm going to give you a call a little bit this afternoon because I like that. I'm going to look at a couple of videos on church. I never even know those existed, but it makes sense. So I'll give you a call in a couple hours or so.
Okay,